Morning. Today's daf in Nechulin's Kuf Yud Beis. We start today on Kuf Yud Alpha Mid Beis at the first white line, and we start today with the topic of Not Bar Not, No Sin Tam Bar No Sin Tam. A really, really important topic in the Gemara and Chulin. I mean, so many important topics, but the really important topic in that it affects a lot of Halach Lamaisa. After learning the Gemara, you won't know enough to really paskin Halach Lamaisa, but at least we'll be grounded. At least we'll have the basic information in terms of knowing. So many foods are dairy or labeled dairy, and they're not really dairy, but rather cooked on dairy equipment. And as such, so what happens is that means that equipment was previously used for dairy. And then what they did is they ran another product on that equipment, so that now product is actually made on equipment that was used previously for dairy. So if you could follow along, so that means that dairy, in order to get into that food, it took two jumps. In other words, it took one jump to go from the dairy into the equipment, and then a second jump to go from the equipment into the food. And this is what in halacha is known as no sin tam bar no sin tam. What is the status of no sin tam bar no sin tam? I'm so happy you asked. That's where we're going to be starting today's Gemara. The Gemara starts off with the following discussion. Now, back in the day, so we're going to look at a really interesting par food, and that is fish. Fish is a really interesting par food. It is a par food. On the other hand, the Gemara in Pesachim tells us that one is not allowed to eat fish and meat together. Eating fish and meat together poses some risk hazards. So therefore, the Gemara in Pesachim says one is not allowed to eat fish and meat together. So what I'm going to ask you right now to do is forget the Gemara in Pesachim. Okay, good. We forgot the Gemara in Pesachim. We remembered a little bit, but let's just right now, for our purposes, just describe fish as being a totally par food. Good. With that stated now, so what I have is I have fish, which is a par food, which is cooked on a fleshic plate. Now, I don't really mean cooked, but I do mean, however, that it's hot. Either the fish is hot, the plate's hot, maybe both are hot. Now, the Gemara happens not to be particularly clear about that point, which is obviously also an important point, but the fish goes now on a fleshic plate. So you had now, in order for the fleshic to go into the fish, once again, you have that double jump. You have first, previously, the plate was used for fleshic, previously. A hot piece of meat was put on the plate. So that means that there was a transfer of taste from the meat into the plate. And then what we did is we put the plate through the dishwasher. We took it out. And now we're going to put parv on top of the plate. So now for that meat to go into the fish, so that's now going to be our second jump. And once again, this is no sin tam bar no sin tam, otherwise known in short as not bar not. What now becomes of not bar not? What's the status of not bar not? The Gemara discusses. Idma dagim shalu bekara. So if I have fish now going on the plate, so the Gemara is able to see it or say it really succinctly. So Rav Amar Asalach Lambekutach, Rav says you can't eat it with cheese. Kutach is not really cheese. Kutach is more like a cheese dip. Right, back in the day, it was really popular, this kutach. In Bavel, right, they love their kutach. It comes up again and again throughout the Talmud Bavli. It's got real cheese in it. It has actual cheese in it. So can I eat this fish together with cheese? The Rav says, no, you cannot. And the reason why, as the Gemara is about to articulate, is because the fish has got the taste of meat in it. And if you're dipping it in kutach, so you're going to be eating meat and milk. Shmuel Amar Mutalach L'makutach. Shmuel says, you're allowed to eat this fish together with kutach. The Gemara goes on to explain. Rav Amar Aser, no sin tam hu. So according to Rav, it's nesinas tam, meaning that is considered taste. The taste of meat is in the fish. Shmuel Amar Mutar no sin tam bar no sin tam. When Shmuel says no, it's not bar not, it's no sin tam bar no sin tam. It is a derivative of the taste. It's a secondary taste. And again, like we described earlier, it made two jumps. Now the Gemara points out that when Rav says that no sin tam bar no sin tam is considered tam, it's considered taste, Rav didn't say it explicitly, we just know it based on the following episode. V'had Rav la beferish edmar lemichlal edmar derav ikla lebe Rav Shimi bar Chiya bar berei. So Rav goes, visits his grandchild, his grandson. Chash be'inav, and Rav at that point in time had an eye ache. So Abdulay Shifa bitsa'a. And so what they do is they prepare an ointment on a particular plate. Basa'achi ramale bishula begava. Now, later that plate was subsequently cleaned, and they put dinner on that very same plate. And now Rav is eating his dinner, and what is he tasting when he's eating his dinner? So he's tasting that eye ointment. So time le time de shayfa amar yav time ikule hai. So the Gemara says, wow, who would have think? That what happened is that the eye ointment went on the plate, then it was rinsed, then the plate was rinsed, subsequently rinsed. So now, what happened in order for that eye ointment taste to go into the food? Once again, double jump. It had to go from the eye ointment into the plate, subsequently from the plate back into the food, and yet Rav is tasting it. So even though it's a no same time, bar no same time, it's a derivative taste, a secondary taste, Rav is tasting it. Now the Gemara says, look, if all I had was just that story alone, I wouldn't know necessarily that Rav holds that not bar not is asr. V'lo hi shani hasam denafish maritzfei. Well, they're talking about an eye ointment. An eye ointment, what do they use for eye ointment? So first and foremost, I don't know. let's just start there. However, herbs and spices, and it was, in other words, they had a really, really particularly strong fragrance and aroma to it and taste to it. And so therefore, just because in that case there was a sensation of a secondary taste, that doesn't mean that's true in general. Now, this is the Gemara as classic as the Gemara can get. The Gemara is just pushing back. In fact, by the way, Tosus makes this point here clearly. The Gemara is pushing back. We're not questioning whether Rav's position is not bar not is asr, not bar not is mutter. We know he holds that not bar not is asr. Gemara is just simply saying, look, if all you got is a story, I'm not sure if the story can necessarily bring us to that conclusion. But the Gemara is not actually challenging the conclusion. It's just that story in of itself is not going to do it for me. Okay. Gemara tells the following episode. This episode, by the way, is going to be interesting. Rabbi Elazar v'kam kamei d'mar Shmuel aisel kamei dagim shalu bekar v'ka'acha b'kutach. So there was fish that was made on meat equipment. Now again, I'm using a modern term, but basically the fish was going on a plate that was used previously for meat. Fine. And so now this fish is not bar not. Now Shmuel eating, and we already know what Shmuel holds. Shmuel holds that not bar not is mutter. A secondary taste is not significant. And so therefore, Shmuel had no problem taking that fish and dipping it in cheese. Good. Again, it's not totally clear from the Gemara. But something's got to be hot. If nothing's hot, then there's no transfer whatsoever. So something's got to be hot. The plate's hot, the fish is hot. But I'm not clear. It's a great question. And I just happen, the Gemara happens not to be super clear about if both of them are hot or one of them are hot. Right. I assume it's the fish. I think... Okay, good. So Yahiv Levelo Achel. Now, Shmuel passes a piece of this fish to Rebbe Elazar with the cheese dip on it, and Rebbe Elazar says, no, thank you, I'm not hungry. Now, I'm editorializing just a little bit. In other words, Rebbe Elazar says no, but Shmuel knows good and well why Rebbe Elazar is saying no. In other words, it's a halachic consideration. Now, Shmuel says to Rebbe Elazar, now, I know your Rebbe, your Rebbe's Rav, and I know your Rebbe would eat it. And that's very strange, by the way, because we just learned together that his Rebbe would not eat it. So what's Shmuel talking about? But Shmuel said it. He says, I know your Rebbe would eat it. And if your Rebbe's ready to eat it, so why aren't you going to eat it? So, also l'kamei d'Rav. So Rebbe Elazar had the opportunity to ask his Rebbe. His Rebbe was still alive. And so he goes back to Rav and he says to Rav, you know, it's interesting. You know what Shmuel accused you of? He accused you of eating not bar not together with the other men. So it was fish on a fleshic plate, and he said that you would have eaten it with cheese. Is that true? Amalei hadar bar mar mishmaite. And Rav Elazar says to Rav, did you retract from your position? Because I sit in your shear and I listen carefully, and I know your psak. So what happened? Did you retract? So amalei chasle lazar da abba bar, but delis vili mi divelos virili. So Rav's response, a very simple response. God forbid that Shmuel over here is referred to as abba bar abba. Right, just as an interesting footnote, Shmuel's father's name was Abba, seemingly, presumably, and Rav's name also was Abba, but anyway. So Rav basically said, Shmuel wouldn't serve me something that he knows I wouldn't eat. Meaning, well, hayu dvar me olam. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what he's talking about. Never happened. Okay. And so ends that story. And the story ends, obviously, on a very odd point, because now it comes out, what was Shmuel talking about? Meaning Shmuel said very confidently, you know, it's funny, Rav would eat it. I know Rav would eat it. And you're not going to eat it? And when Rav Elazar approaches Rav and says to Rav, is that true? And Rav says, no, it's not true. Never happened. I don't know what he's talking about. So it only begs the question, right? A simple follow-up question. What was Shmuel talking about? The Gemara doesn't ask that question. And so you're left wondering at the end of that of this particular story, what was Shmuel talking about? Right? Did he lie? We'd hate to say that. I'd hate to say that. In other words, that would be totally not only inappropriate, but just it would not fit who we know Shmuel to be.
Nobody talks about it.
And I mean, I'm sure it's discussed, but on the daf itself, we move along. Okay, so the I have a better than good feeling that I didn't check it up, but if you look, take a look at one of the notes in the art scroll, or in the Masifta, I'm sure he's going to quote a slew of Achronim, or maybe even Rishonim, who discussed the question, but quite frankly, I haven't seen anything. Rav Huna, Rav Chia Bar Ashi, Hava Yasei Chad B'Hagisa D'Mavra, D'Sur V'Chad B'Hagisa D'Mavra. Okay, the Gemara now tells us another story, obviously germane to our discussion, of two Amoraims, each one sitting on one side of the river. Okay, a funny way to have them situated, but that's where they're sitting right now. Now, for one person, so he ate his fleishik, I'm putting it in quotes, his fleishik fish, he ate it with cheese. Now again, I say fleishik fish. Mm-hmm. It was not barnat. In other words, the fish went on a plate that was previously used for meat. So, and on that, he ate it together with cheese dip. And the other one, Lamar and for the other one, he did something equally controversial. And that is that he ate figs and grapes in the middle of a meal. When I say in the middle of the meal, meaning he washed and he made motzi. So in the middle of a meal, he ate figs and grapes, and he didn't make a bracha. Neither a bracha rishona nor a bracha achrona. Now, Mar amalei lechavre yasma aved rabcha hachi, and so now the accusations start flying with finger pointing, and so one says to the other. Now again, language over here being strong language, right? Yasma, right? Literally, you orphaned one. Okay, and over here we could sugarcoat it just a little bit. I'd love to sugarcoat it. So over here it could just simply be orphan, meaning in terms of your scholarship, in terms of you being a talmid chacham. So yasma aved rabcha hachi, would your rebbe do this? Umar amale lechavre yasma aved rabcha hachi, and then just the counter accusation. Well, would your rebbe do that? Would he not make a bracha on te'enim and anavim in the middle of a meal? So, and the Gemara now goes on to defend each position. So, yasma aved rabcha hachi, amar amale lechavre ana kishmul svirli. So now the defenses. The defenses start off, and we know already. What's the defense for eating that fish together with cheese? It's no Saint Tom, bar no Saint Tom, and I hold like Shmuel. Anak Shmuel sverely. Omar male lechavre anak Rabbi Chia sverely. Oh, and the fact that I didn't make a bracha on figs and grapes in the middle of the meal, I hold like Rabbi Chia. Didni Rabbi Chia pas poters kol minei maichel v'yayin poter kol minei mashkim. That as it relates to bread is going to exempt all other brachas in the course of the meal. Wine, even if you're not having a meal, but you're sitting down, you're drinking wine. Wine is going to exempt all other drinks that you're drinking in the course of the wine drinking. So if you have wine and then you take a pause from the wine and you have a glass of water, so the wine is going to pot through the water and all other drinks. Interesting, by the way, I said very candidly and very bluntly, very flatly, that we're talking here about making both a bracha rishona and a bracha achrona, or at least the debate is going on both a bracha rishona and bracha achrona. That is not super clear cut. Whether or not the question over here is bracha rishona and bracha achrona, or maybe just bracha rishona. So I'm just pointing out that the rishonim debate this issue,
on the fruits
that occur in the middle of the meal.
Right.
Are we talking about fruits in the middle of the meal? Are we talking about fruits at the end of the meal? Another discussion to be had in the Gemara. But again, it's not really our topic. Correct. So anyway, it's not really our topic, so I'm just going to bypass, although a lot of important points that I'm bypassing. So just note. Amar Chizkiya Mishum Abaye Hilchasa. So the Gemara now arrives at the conclusion regarding No Saint Tam Bar No Saint Tam. Dagnim Shalu Bekara Mutal Achlam Bekutach. The Gemara passes like Shmuel. And even though, generally speaking, when you have a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel, we do follow like Rav when it comes to Isurim. And this clearly is Isur, it's not Mamonos. But nevertheless, the Gemara passes is over here like Shmuel. That not barnat is in fact mutter. So if I have a fish that went on a fleishik plate, so even though there is a secondary taste of meat that went into the fish, it could be disregarded, and that fish could be eaten together with cheese. Okay, and that's the Gemara's conclusion. A number of important points I'll just simply highlight, and then we'll take it from there. Tosas over here, Tosas starts off on this amud, and Tosas goes well into the next amud. And Tosas over here quotes an opinion of Rashi. Now, it's really the son-in-law of Rashi that says it, but he says it in the name of his father-in-law. So we'll call it Rashi's position, which is that even though the Gemara has just ruled conclusively that the halacha falls like Shmuel, but it's quoted in the name of Rashi, but that's only when the fish goes on the fleishik plate. If the fish were to be cooked in a fleishik pot, or for that matter, anything parf. Let's, instead of fish, let's use noodles, because I know everyone's going to get sidetracked by the fish and meat issue. So if noodles were cooked in a fleshik pot, according to Rashi, that is not an area where we would say it's just simply no Saint Tom bar no Saint Tom, and then we could just simply take that those noodles and eat it with cheese. Meaning that there's a difference between alu b'ka'ara, simply going on a plate, versus actually being cooked in a fleshik plate, in a fleshik pot. And so it's quoted in the name of Rashi that if it's cooked in a fleshik pot, so that should not be eaten with dairy. You can't melt cheese on those noodles that were cooked on a fleshik pot. That is Rashi's position. And then Tosfos has a lengthy discussion as to whether or not that is supportable or not supportable to make such a distinction. In terms of us Ashkenazim, where do we stand in terms of the halacha on this issue? So lechatchila, the Rama writes, lechatchila, we should be machmer like Rashi. So in other words, if you made pasta in a fleshik pot, and again, there are so many other variables, and this is where I don't want to get lost in the halacha. It's important, obviously, but our goal over here is to go through the daf. But like there are other variables to take in consideration, as the pot of ben yomo, the pot in eno ben yomo, and you know, just one of a number of considerations. But I'll just say the Ramas Psak, very simple. If the pasta was cooked in a fleshik pot, and let's assume it's a ben yomo, it's a fleshik pot. And so the Rama says that lichatchila we should be machmir for Rashi, which means to say that if you were to call me up and say to me, would I be allowed to melt cheese on this pasta? I'd say no. Meaning lichatchila we should be machmir for Rashi. However, the Rama writes b'di'eved, so then we don't have to be machmir for Rashi. Meaning if you were to call me after the cheese has already been melted on the noodles, so I would have said you shouldn't have done it, but now that it's done, go ahead, enjoy those noodles. Okay, that's the psak of the Rama, that lichatchila we should be concerned with the opinion of Rashi.
But if you call afterwards, then it's not to rejoice that you should have enjoyed it.
Right. No. B'di'evit means if after it was prepared, not after it was eaten. After it was prepared, so then the b'di'evit, you don't have to be machmir for Rashi. Okay, again. That's just, but there are a number of other variables, meaning we still don't know yet the halacha. You know, it's a great opportunity to call your rabbi. And discuss a halacha with him. Anyway, continuing in the Gemara, so that's one psak that was given in the name of Abaye. The tzon is known shechatchu b'sakin shechatchu b'basar. Let's say I had a knife that previously I used for cutting meat, and I cut a radish with that knife. Also la'achlam b'kutach. I can't eat that radish together with cheese. Okay, now. We all, right, good. So we all like basically have an idea of what's
like
going on over here.
The
hani mili tznon. Now that's specifically a radish agav chorfei bala because it's so sharp. So therefore, it's going to really imbibe. It's going to draw in that taste, the fleshic taste that's on the knife. Avakishus, but if all I'm doing is cutting something like a zucchini or a cucumber, something gourd like, which is basically bland in nature. So garle be paskav achel. So then. No real blia, no real absorption of taste. Just simply scrape off the area in which you cut, and you are good to go. The obvious question, which Rashi over here deals with, is as follows. We just learned that in Abaye's Psak, he said that not bar not is something which we can ignore. Right? No Saint Tom bar no Saint Tom. Right? That's an issue which basically you can ignore. And so the fish that was put on the fleshic plate so does not have the taste of meat in it. So if I cut a radish with a fleshik knife, why isn't this also a case of not bar not? Let's consider what happened. What happened was that the taste of the meat went into the knife when I cut the meat. Let's assume that you cut a hot piece of meat. So the taste of the meat went into the knife, but then when I cut the radish, so now the taste of the meat goes from the knife into the radish. This is a double jump. This is not bar not. So if in the case of the plate and the fish, we're going to be mekel, which Abaye is going to be mekel, like Shmuel. So why over here are we not going to be mekel as well? Okay, good. So you have answers. I also have answers. I have Rashi. So Rashi addresses this very question, and Rashi writes as follows. Rashi's on the top of Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph. Rashi writes, Kishos, Mesukahi v'enu nivla b'socha el ashma nunis tzafa omen al makam achitoch. Hilchach garele bei paskal al makam chitoch. Gorem ma'at b'sakim v'achal. Af bikutach hilkach dagim shalu bekara mutal achol bikutach the amar deino sin tam haba min amamish ella no sin tam haba min no sin tam destam kara mekanchen oso mishum and kara shalai mishum mius. Right. So Rashi starts off with the following. You know, when it comes to the plate, you know you washed the plate well. Meaning, after meat was put onto the plate, so what you did is you either you did it old school, you washed it with your hands, or you put it in the dishwasher. In any event, there's no mamushus of the meat on the plate, explains Rashi. In other words, the only thing you have is a tam basar in the plate, which then, when you put the hot fish on, is going to come out. So this is a case of not bar not. Aval isakin. But Rashi says, but let's compare it to the case of the knife. You see, when it comes to the knife, pa'amim she'ashamnun is karish alav, ve'eno nikar. So Rashi describes that with the knife, it's not bar not because you have actual mamushus of what you previously cut. The fat, the residue fat of the meat is actually on the knife.
Even if you clean.
Right. So Rashi's, right. And I think what Rashi's saying is that our general behavior pattern with knives are not the same as plates. Meaning with plates, we typically clean plates. That's our general conduct regarding plates. Right. Regarding knives, okay, so I cut one food.
Sort of quickly.
Yeah.
Maybe because
of the grooves. Could be, right. Not totally clear, but what Rashi is doing is now making a distinction between the case of the knife and the case of the plate, and you have to make a distinction, otherwise they're both not bar not. So ve'eino nikar k'shechotech b'tzon havino sintam abamina mamish. So Rashi says that what has happening over here is that this is not a case of not bar not, because this is a case where you have mamushus on the knife. Va'od, furthermore, Rashi points out, mishum chorfei balatfei, midagim arostim. And on top of that, Rashi points out that because it's a radish and it's really sharp, it has more blia power. Vagavduch, the sakina, palet sakina, balet known. And on top of that, you also have the friction of the knife. Rashi is hitting this distinction so hard. Meaning, if you think about it, what Rashi is pointing out now is actually there are three separate points that Rashi makes. One, you have shamnunis on the knife itself. Two, the radish is really sharp with more drawing power. More absorption power. And three, Rashi points out, duch de sakina, you also have the friction of the knife. So you talk about where Rashi is basically screaming, the cases are different, and Rashi attacks it from three different angles. Okay. Back to the Gemara. Kilche, we're at two lines down in Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph. Kilche de lifte, if we're talking now about the stalks of a turnip, shari. The stalks of a turnip that were cut with a fleshic knife. So once again, it's a really bland vegetable. It's not going to really draw the taste of the knife. However, the silka asire, but beets, the Gemara considers beets to be a sharper vegetable. Okay? The truth of the matter is, if you think about it, it's beyond sharp, meaning beets are nearly inedible, unless you cook it. But anyway, the silka asire, evi'i patach buhu delifta sharpidami. Interesting halacha over here, the Gemara points out, that if I take my meat knife and I alternate between beet, turnip. Now, turnip, as we pointed out, is on one hand, it itself doesn't draw the taste of the knife. On the other hand, the Gemara describes it over here as it kind of like negates, counteracts the whatever fleshic taste may be on the knife. So before I cut the beet, I cut a turnip. So that turnip is going to basically negate whatever meat residue is going to be on the knife, and you're good. And you're fine. Meaning that then the meat taste is not going to go into the beet. As opposed to if I would have cut with a meat knife, I would have cut directly the beet, where the beet has the status of being a sharp food and would have drawn the taste. But if I cut a turnip beforehand, so then you're fine. Can I put my salt container right next to my cheese dip? Put them side by side. Now, putting them side by side, meaning what's the problem? The problem is, says the Gemara, or at least considers the Gemara, is that what's going to end up happening is that some of the cheese may actually spill over into the salt. And generally speaking, we assume that salt is a par food. It is a par food. But generally speaking, what we use is we take our salt out, we salt our meat, we take our salt out, we salt our cheese. And so the problem is that if I have the salt, which is next to the cheese dip, and a little bit of the cheese dip falls into the salt, so we have a problem now, of course, of unknowingly using the salt for meat. So Amalei Aser. So in fact, it's such a serious concern that the Rav Nachman says, don't leave them side by side next to one another. And I'll add, I think I'm correct about this, don't leave them uncovered. Meaning if they're both covered, so then I assume it would be okay. Dechalamai. What about leaving the cheese dip right next to the vinegar? Is that going to be a problem? Now, back in the day, vinegar was a condiment that they put on everything, right? They put vinegar on cheese. They put vinegar on meat. So again, vinegar, like salt, a condiment of the good old days. Amrle Shari. So he says, putting the cheese dip next to the vinegar is no problem whatsoever. Wait one second. Just a moment earlier, you were concerned about the cheese falling into the salt, and you're not concerned about the cheese falling into the vinegar? Maishna, why is that different? So first he gives them a quip, which the Gemara now notes, Rav Nachman uses this quip a number of times. Do me a favor. Measure me a core of salt, and after you perform that service for me, so then I'll answer your question. And so basically, it's one way of simply saying that, let's think about it. It's also another way of saying that, look, you'll do a service for me, and basically, in response to that, I'm going to go ahead and give you an answer. So my time, as far as the actual distinction to be made, goes like this. If the cheese dip were to fall on the salt, so the salt is not going to do anything to the cheese dip other than just simply hold it. But in other words, the cheese dip is still going to be be'en. You will have actual cheese in the salt, and then if I subsequently were to use that salt for meat, so then I have actual cheese now going into the meat, masha enkein. If I have the cheese dip next to vinegar, and a little bit of cheese falls into the vinegar, so the vinegar, as we all know, so it's really acidic, it's going to basically take apart that cheese, and it's going to basically destroy it. It's going to negate it. And it'll be mevatel, that small little trace amount of cheese that goes in. And the Gemara's language is, it is leisa isur be'en. The isur is no longer in existence. Meaning, what we're going to have to add to the Gemara is that not the isur is there, and not the taste of the isur is there as well. Gemara follows up with these next three, four lines of Gemara. Okay, let's give it a little bit more. Let's say seven lines of Gemara. A lot of halach lamaisa. And the truth of the matter is that, right, being that at one point in my life I went through Tarov as well, so I know that there's a lot of halach lamaisa contained in these lines. We're just doing it the way we normally do with the daf. We'll do it superficially, unfortunately. So, but I'm just telling you that there's so much halacha rich in these next lines. There was a goose that fell into cheese dip. And so the ruling was, it's mutter. Now, if both the cheese dip and the goose were both hot, so then I have hot meat falling into hot milk, so that would be called basa b'chalav. So obviously over here, they were cold. Now, does that mean they were both cold? Does that mean that the cheese dip was cold and the goose itself was hot? It's not perfectly clear, and that's where I said the discussion really ensues from there. But let's assume, and again, it's an assumption, and we're not necessarily right. Let's assume it was both cold. So the Gemara says it's fine. Amar Rav Aman Chacham LeMishri Ki Aygavna Ilav Rav China Bereid Rav MiPasunya Kasav Ki Amar Shmuel Melech Harei Koroseach. Now the Gemara says, now you realize that in this psak he had a tremendous chiddush. In other words, something, there was salt involved. Let's say the goose was salted, and there was salt on the goose. Or let's say the cheese dip was salted, there was salt on the cheese. Now remember, we've gone over this so many times. Shmuel says that salt, meliach harei koroseach. So over here, even if they weren't actually hot, but wasn't there salt in this exchange? And doesn't that salt basically serve as a heat substitute? And if the salt serves as a heat substitute, so then there was a transfer of taste from the goose into the cheese, and conversely, from the cheese into the goose. And what's going on over here? And what's going on over here is an understanding that Hani Milehechadeinu Nechamachmas Malchava Haikutcha Hare Nechamachmas Machal. Well, the only time that Shmuel said that salt is like heat is only when it's a lot of salt. Salting not to taste, but salting for preservation. Or salting for koshering. So that's the kind of salt where that serves as a heat substitute. But if all we're doing is just putting a little bit of salt on because, hey, I like salt, and I like my food to be a little bit salty, like we all do, right? So that's not going to be considered a heat substitute. On such a situation, Shmuel does not say melech harei koroseach. The Gemara points out hani melechai vatzli by klipa. Now the Gemara says that we're talking about where the goose was raw. But if the goose was roasted, so then, and that goose were to fall into the cheese dip, so you need a klipa, you need to remove just a thin layer off the goose, and presumably a thin layer off the cheese dip as well. Now again, a lengthy discussion. When the Gemara is making a distinction between raw versus roasted, Is that basically the Gemara saying the difference between cold versus hot? Or maybe another way to understand the Gemara is that the Gemara is saying that raw just simply means that it was uncooked, as opposed to roasted, which means that it was previously cooked, and when the goose is cooked, it's a little bit softer, allowing for just a small penetration of blio. Okay. V'is be'pile kule aser. Now, if the goose has a lot of cracks in it, allowing for the cheese to go into the cracks, so then the whole goose is going to be aser. V'metaba betavlan kule aser. Now, if there was, let's say, a rub on the goose, it really softens it up. And under those circumstances, when it then subsequently falls into the cheese dip, that it, because now the meat of the goose is so soft, the spices are going to really help the flavor go into it. Okay. I'm Rav Nachman, I'm Rav Shmuel.
Kikar Shech. It's also soft. So the cheese is definitely also
hard.
Yeah.
No, again. Again, it's right. There's so much to discuss over there. We're gonna go on, but yes, there's many follow-up issues. I'm Rav Nachman. I'm Shmuel. Kikar shechatach alach basar asa la'achla. I cut meat. Now the meat. Let's assume the meat was roasted over here, and I cut the meat. And I cut the meat over the bread. Now again, I'm going to review a point that we made yesterday, but let's make this point as clear as we can. When I have a piece of meat, so is there? And what do? We either roasted the meat or we salted the meat. So we extracted all the blood. Isn't that true? Mostly true. we certainly extracted most of the blood. There may be trace amounts of blood in the meat, and that's not a big deal. Because as we got over yesterday, and we're repeating today, that's dam evarim. Any blood in the muscle, any blood in an organ of an animal is mutter. And mutter legamre. The only problem is that when that blood gets extracted, then that blood is going to be aser. But dam evarim itself is going to be mutter. So, if I have a meat, piece of meat, and I either salted or roasted it either way, so I got out most of the blood, but there's still going to be a little bit of blood in there, and that's fine. That's fine. However, what Shmuel now is discussing is the following. Rav Nachman's quoting in the name of his Rebbe Shmuel, is that let's say I were to take that meat and I were cut it over a piece of bread. So with, again, the friction of the knife, and the back and forth. So what's going to happen now is that I'm probably going to extract a little bit of blood from the meat. Now, prior to extraction, that blood would have been fine. But now that that blood gets extracted and there's a piece of bread right underneath and that blood from the meat drops onto the bread, that bread now becomes usser. Okay. Now, hani mili de ismik v'hani mili de avre v'hani mili de asmiche. Now, the Gemara says that you have to make a distinction, and I'm admitting it's going to be really hard. You have to make a distinction between blood and juice. Meaning, if it's blood, so then it's usser. But obviously, you're not going to be roasting the meat to become rock solid. I know some people like their meat well done. I even like those people. But in other words, there comes a point in time where the meat is going to be totally discharged of all of its blood. Anything coming out after that is just simply juice. And you have to make a distinction. So the Gemara does try to help us make that distinction. The Gemara says it's only blood when it's red, and the coloration goes all the way through the piece of bread, and it's very thick. But if it's a very thin liquid coming out of the meat, that's not blood, that's just simply called juice. I'll call it delicious. But either way, Shmuel Sharile Lekalbe. Now, when Shmuel had this juice falling onto the bread after he cut the meat over the bread, so what he would do is that he would just simply pass that bread over to his dog. Because the blood now is Asar B'Achil, it's not Asar B'Anah. So he'd give it to his dog. Rav Huna Yaivle L'Shamin, and Rav Huna gave it to his attendant. And we're going to assume right now it was a Jewish attendant. And the Gemara asked the obvious question. Manav Shachi Shar L'Kolei Am Shari Yasa L'Kolei Am Yasa. Rav Huna, wait one second. If you hold its mutter, so why aren't you eating it? If you hold its aser, why are you giving it to your attendant, your Jewish attendant? Now, right, so the answer is that it could have been a goy, but obviously it wasn't, because the Gemara didn't give that answer. So, Shani Rav Huna di anine daite. So the Gemara says no. Really, Rav Huna held that it was mutter, but he was delicate, and he wasn't going to eat any bread that had any kind of meat residue, meat juice on the bread. just didn't sit well with him. His attendant was not as delicate. Enjoy it.
It's like the mashgiach doesn't eat his own food.
Well, it's not. It wasn't a halachic consideration. It was just simply, it was a personality issue. Meaning what? Well, in other words, if the juice is not juice, but rather it's blood, so then that blood, when in the meat is mutter, once extracted is usser. Okay. Rava achalei v'karalei chamer basar. Rava would eat the juice that comes out of the meat. In fact, he would call that chamer basar the wine of the meat.
Delicious.
Yeah. Like I said. But Rava beat me by a short 1,700 years. Amar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel Eimanich and Kli Tachas Basar Ashechala Kol Mare Admum Shabo. So now we're back to our drip pan. Okay, we love our drip pan. Yesterday we talked about the drip pan. Today we're going to reintroduce the drip pan once again. You're roasting your meat, and that's a lot of good fat that's coming off of the meat, and you want to collect it. So you put the drip pan underneath. Here's the problem: not only is there fat coming out of the meat, but there's also blood as well. Now, when the blood goes on the coals and gets burned in the coals, so we're fine. But if I'm collecting it in the drip pan, so here's what I'm collecting now from that meat. I'm collecting one, fat, which is both kosher and delicious, and two, I'm also collecting blood, which is not delicious, and it's usser. So that becomes a problem. What do you do? So Shmuel's advice is that wait till all the blood drains. I know the obvious follow-up question is, how do you know? The Gemara is going to ask that question. So you only put the drip pan underneath the meat, the roasting meat, only after all the red has come off of the meat. Red meaning the blood. When you see now it could be either referring to the meat or the coals, Rashi actually offers both pshatim, but when you see that it stops smoking. Okay, and if you think about it, by the way, like in other words, in my barbecuing experience, when you put a liquid on the coals, so you're going to see smoke coming off. You put fat on the coals, so it's going to burn, right? It's basically right. It's a fuel. Good. So when you see it, when the smoke finally clears, so now the blood is finished, and now you can put the drip pan underneath. And the Gemara says, wait 1 second. I'm not convinced that this is a good way to know. If it's a thick piece of meat. So it's true that the part of the meat that's closer to the coals, meaning the bottom, it's true that we have now drained all that part of the blood. But there's still a top part of the meat. And generally speaking, what you do with a thick piece of meat is you do flip it on the grill. And so shouldn't we be concerned that that may still have trace residue of blood? Ela amaravashi leif leitakante ela mishad debe tartig ala milcha umishafya umishafya. So the Gemara now gives a totally different approach of how to solve for the problem. Again, you want to put your drip pan underneath, but on the one hand, you want to segregate the fat from the blood. So the Gemara says, here's what you do. You put in two lumps of salt on the drip pan. And what that will do then is that any blood that drips down is going to be attracted to the salt and draw towards the salt. Any fat that goes down is just going to simply hover above it. And then umishafya. And then after all that's been collected, now you have to make sure that when you pour really slowly so that only the fat pours out and the blood remains in the drip pan. Rashi, by the way, quotes in the name of the Halachas Gedolos that when the Gemara says that you put two lumps of salt on the drip pan, so specifically two lumps, see Rashi for a discussion of why specifically it has to be two lumps, no less, no more. Okay. He quotes in the name of the Halachas Gedolos. Amalei Rav Achibre de Rav Ika le Rav Ashi umi amar Shmuel hachiv amar Shmuel kika shechata chala basar asa lachla. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. We just spent a lot of time talking about the drip pan with the assumption that there comes a point in time where in the middle of the grilling, you have basically drained all the blood from the meat. How does this work with the halacha that we learned earlier this morning? Earlier this morning, we talked about a piece of meat that was fully roasted. And meanwhile, when I cut it, so there could be trace amounts of blood that are coming out. Well, which one is it? Is the blood being depleted halfway through the grilling process? Or is there still going to be blood even at the end of the grilling? You got to choose. So the Gemara says, Shani Hasam da'agav duch de sakina palit. So the Gemara says, no, you don't have to choose. Not necessary. Meaning in the grilling process, there will come a point in time where no more blood is coming out during the grilling. However, this doesn't mean that we've depleted of all of its blood. There's still going to be blood inside, but it's not coming out during the grilling process, meaning that's done. We've exhausted the grilling blood. However, after you finish grilling it, and then you take a knife and you are now pressing with the friction of the knife afterwards, you could still be able to extract some blood through the duch, the sakina, through the friction and the pressure of the knife. Good. I'm Rav Nachman. Okay. Anyone ever see meat actually get salted? Now, correct. You're correct. So a segment of our population, right? The quote unquote the older generation, right? So they're going to remember the time in which what do you mean salting? We used to salt, right? We used to bring the meat home from the butcher, and we used to salt the meat. Okay, good. And you ask the younger folk, and they're not going to know what you're talking about, because in other words, the meat's already salted, and when you're buying it at the butcher, it's already been salted. Okay, so okay, look, it's where we're at. Okay, now's not a good time to bemoan the situation. It's just, you know, we're learning the daf.
Good old days.
Right. And wax poetic about the good old days. Anyway, I noticed I'm starting to do that, by the way. So I'm like, you know. What you would do is you would take the meat, you would put it in the basket, and you'd salt. And, of course, what's really important is make sure the perforations, so that when you're salting the meat, the blood's going to drain. You don't want the salty blood to be sitting there in the meat. You obviously, the whole point over here is that you want the salt to drain. So you want to put it in a perforated, in some sort of perforated a box, or you put out a slant. Okay, good. So the Gemara now discusses, what if I were now to salt not just one piece of meat by itself, but meat together with other pieces of meat? Now the Gemara gets even more complicated. The Gemara doesn't even start off simple. The Gemara starts off difficult, right? What if I were to salt in the same box or in the same utensil fish and birds, chicken and birds? Let's use chicken. So what if I were to salt chicken and birds? Chicken and fish. Now, first and foremost, we all know there is no need to salt fish. In other words, the blood of fish is totally mutter. Fine. So there's absolutely no need to do so. Here comes the problem. The problem is that when I salt fish and birds together, chicken and fish together, so what's going to end up happening is that the salt is going to extract the blood out of the chicken and bring it into the fish. And so now what I've created is an isser of bird blood in the fish. Now you have to wonder, now we started off really complicated. Meaning, why don't we start off really simple? Meaning, isn't the same problem going to be true if I'm going to be salting pieces of bird together? Meaning, if it's not one piece of bird, but multiple pieces of bird, aren't we going to have the same problem? So stay tuned. So Amar Rav Nachman, Dagim Ve'Ofish HaMachem Zeim Zeh Asurim. So it's going to be prohibited, meaning presumably the fish are going to be prohibited. And now, if what we did is we salted in a container that was non-perforated, so this problem is not going to be limited to fish and chicken. This problem is going to be true even with chicken and chicken. And ibikli manukav, and if it's perforated, afilu dagim ve'ofes nami shari. So didn't all the blood drain out through the perforations? Like, what's the issue? So la'olam b'kli manuka v'dagum mishum d'rafi karmayu kadme upalte v'ofos kemite baser d'niche dagum pliti ofos v'hadar balamine. And the Gemara says like this, and I know I read it all very quickly, but I'm going to explain. Gemara says like this. When it comes to salting in general, so what happens is that when you're salting the meat, so the blood's coming out. And as we've discussed already numerous times, and let's say it again, when it comes to blia, when it comes to discharge and absorption, it's a one-way street. While you are discharging, you are simply unable to absorb. You can't discharge and absorb at the same time. Can't do that. So when I'm salting pieces of meat or pieces of chicken together, it's all going to be discharging, and as long as the blood's going to drain out, we have no problem whatsoever. In other words, and why are we worried that one piece of meat or one piece of chicken is going to be absorbing the blood that's coming out from its neighboring piece of chicken? And the answer is because it's all discharging. Yeah. And while it's all discharging, it can't absorb. Ah. That's good if the rate of discharge is the same rate. Right. However, when I'm salting chicken and fish in the same container, and even if it's perforated, and that means that there's places for the blood to go after it drains, but here's the problem. The fish drain out really quickly. The skin, the Gemara describes the skin of the fish being really, really porous, really light, and so therefore what happens is that whatever blood is in the fish is going to drain out really quickly. And now what's happening is that in our container, so now the fish has finished draining, and now what? Now the pores are open, and now it's ready to go in the other direction, where now the blood is still draining out of the chicken, and it's going to go into the fish, and that creates the problem. The Gemara says that's why it's difficult. Okay. We'll pause over here. I mean, we have just a little bit more to go to finish the daf, but we'll pick it up tomorrow, because really it's a sentence that goes into tomorrow's daf. But meanwhile, let's recap. Not bar not, no same time, bar no same time. Machlok chin rav and Shmuel. The Gemara, interestingly, passing like Shmuel. I say interesting because it's Isser, and normally by Isser we passing like Rav, but over here we passing like Shmuel. Much to discuss with a not bar not. We just scratched the surface of no same time, bar no same time. We don't know the halacha, but at least we begin to know the halacha of no same time, bar no same time. Discussions of cutting vegetables with a fleshik knife. Do those vegetables become fleshik? If it's a sharp vegetable, the answer is yes. What's the difference between that no sin tam bar no sin tam? So we spent a good amount of time this morning going through the Rashi, making not one but three different distinctions between the two cases. The Gemara talked about putting salt and cheese dip next to one another, a rabbinic concern that some of the cheese dip is going to fall into the salt, not a concern if you're putting vinegar next to the salt. What happens when a bird falls into cheese dip? Cold bird falls into cheese dip. So the Gemara says it's fine, unless. And what about the fact that it has a little bit of salt on? A little bit of salt does not create resicha, does not create roasting. The Gemara, so much to review from today's daf. The Gemara does make distinctions of what happens if the bird that falls into the cheese dip is cooked. Does that mean it's hot? Does that mean it was just previously cooked? What happens if if the bird has a lot of cracks in it? And what happens if the bird was previously seasoned and softened? Cutting meat over bread, that red juice that comes out of the meat when you cut it, is that considered just juice or is that considered blood? The Gemara discussed that on Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph. And finally, final discussion of the Gemara is the drip pan underneath the meat that's roasting, where I'm collecting both the fat and the blood. And how do I separate the fat from the blood? So the Gemara gave a couple of approaches in terms of how to do that as well.